Thank you for listening to this Podcast One production. Available on Apple Podcasts and Podcast One.
There is a place that is spoken about only in whispers. A dark area that spawns the beginnings of urban legends. A place where anything can happen and usually does. During the light of day, it hides just outside of view. But when the sun goes down, spirits, creatures of the night, roam free, and things do go bump in the night. It is in every state and every country, and there is no escaping it, no matter how safe you feel behind your locked doors and latched windows. So we invite you to turn down the lights and turn up your radio while we join Dave Schrader and Tim Dennis, your hosts, on a journey into the darkness on the edge of town.
Hello and welcome. You're tuned into the best in paranormal talk radio. It's Saturday, and this is Beyond the Darkness. I'm your host, Dave Schrader. That guy over there, that's Tim Dennis. We got a lot of cool stuff to get into today, but before that, let me tell you, I've got a brand new sponsor with the program, somebody I'm extremely excited to be working about because I actually use the products myself. Away creates thoughtful products designed to change how you see the world. They started with the perfect suitcase, crafted with features that make travel more seamless. Now, they offer a range of essentials that solve real travel problems. So all you have to think about is where you're headed next, because getting away means getting more out of every trip to come. With their suitcases, Away knows that everyone has a different travel style. That's why they make their carry-on in an array of colors, two sizes, and two materials, a strong yet flexible polycarbonate and an anodized aluminum. The lightweight and durable shell that's made to last for a lifetime of travel. How many of you have gone out and purchased new luggage, you take it on a trip, and you get it at your first stop, and it's already scuffed, beat up, chipped, torn? That happens to all of us. Well, if you're looking for durable, great luggage, Away has your answer. 100-day trial lets you try any Away product on the road. That's right, 100-day trial. It's a limited lifetime warranty, means that they'll fix or replace your bag if it ever gets damaged. It's got a built-in compression pad that helps you pack more in. A range of unique personalization offerings come with it as well, including hand painting. There's four 360-degree spinner wheels that guarantee a smooth ride, and it's TSA approved with a combination lock that keeps your belongings safe. It's an optional ejectable battery, that's what I loved about it, to keep your phone charged, and a removable laundry bag to separate dirty clothes from clean clothes. And I've been on the road a lot this year with the Holzer Files filming, and I only wish that I had had this bag at that point. I've used it on a few of my trips since, and it is remarkable. It's a fantastic bag to use. Now, let's say you want something a little bigger. They have the bigger carry-on that comes with just the right size to fit in to most overhead bins. A lightweight and durable shell that's made to last for a lifetime of travel. And again, you get that 100-day trial that lets you try any Away product on the road. With that limited lifetime warranty, that means they'll fix it up and get it going if you ever need that. Here's something else I want to mention to our listeners. We have a special that's going on right now. So remember, with the Away products, suitcases that are designed to last a lifetime, you need to treat yourself right. If you're going to travel, get the bags that are going to set you apart, that are going to come through every time, are durable, can protect your stuff and all of your clothes. You get that 100-day trial on everything that Away makes. So take it out on the road, live with it, travel with it, get lost with it. If you decide it's not for you, you can return any non-personalized item for a full refund. And there's no ifs, ands, or buts, or asterisks about it. Plus, did I mention free shipping on any Away order ordered within the contiguous U.S., Europe, and Australia? And you can get Away offline, too. Want to see it for yourself? You can shop everything Away at their stores in New York, Austin, L.A., San Francisco, Boston, Chicago, and London. I've used this. I endorse it. This is a great bag. This has been something I'm absolutely happy to use, and I would highly suggest to anybody that's out there listening. If you like to travel, whether you are a globetrotter like myself or whether you just like to pop in and out on family drives and go visit and see friends and family, this is the right luggage for you because it's always going to be durable, always going to take exactly what you need to get out of it. So make sure you check it out. Here's a special offer that we have for you. All right. For $20 off a suitcase, visit Away Travel. That's AwayTravel.com/darkness. And then use promo code darkness during checkout. So that's AwayTravel.com/darkness and use promo code darkness during checkout. It's just that easy. So again, for $20 off a suitcase, visit awaytravel.com/darkness. Use that promo code darkness during your checkout. All right, Tim, supernatural news. Parashare is here. We've got some phone calls. That's right, people. You're picking up the phones. We're so proud of you when you can do that. And if you want to call and be a part of the show, 651-300-4977 is the number to call to share your real-life encounters with the strange and the supernatural. Give us a call. Tell us your stories. We'll share it on an upcoming episode. But let's start off in the news, Tim. What kind of weirdness is going on out there right now?
Well, Dave, all the excited geeks have united, and it's been an exciting week for them. Amazon has reunited and Simon... Let me start that over. Let me rewind here, Dave. It's been a rough morning for me. Amazon is reuniting Simon Pegg and Nick Frost for a show about ghost hunters, Dave.
Oh, I heard about this. Yeah.
Yeah. The Shaun of the Dead duo are coming back together for Truth Seekers. Amazon has been taking some bizarre swings with its series lately. Bezos may have issued a decree in 2017 to find him his own Game of Thrones style hit. But in the past few years, the streaming service has been cranking out fewer global fantasy behemoths and more strange singular shows, sometimes like with Forever and Comrade Detective, This Works Out, and other times we get stuck with Good Omens or whatever Too Old to Die Young was supposed to be. But even with the failure, even the failures are interesting, to say the least. But now it looks like the streamer's willingness to let creators get weird is about to pay off because the company just signed on to bring Hot Fuzz and Shaun of the Dead's Simon Pegg and Nick Front back together for a brand new series. This, according
to Nick Frost. Nice spelling error there, people.
Yeah,
come on.
Yeah. Well, Nick Frost.
Front.
Well,
yeah.
Yeah.
Good old Simon Pegg and Nick Front, my two favorite actors.
I just read it the way they spell it.
I know.
Together for a brand new series, this according to Variety, or Variety, however they spell it here. On Monday, Amazon announced that it had picked up Pegg and Front, or Frost's, half-hour horror comedy series, Truth Seekers. The duo will co-write and star in the 8-episode first series. The show synopsis goes like this. Frost plays Gus, one half of a ghost-hunting duo, who team up to uncover and film paranormal sightings across the UK in the series, as opposed to elsewhere. They stake out haunted churches, underground bunkers, and abandoned hospitals using an array of homemade ghost-detecting gizmos. That's official, by the way. And share their adventures on an online channel. Their supernatural experiences grow more frequent, terrifying, and even deadly as the pair begin to uncover a conspiracy that could threaten the entire human race. Peg Wills also stars in the show as Dave,
about time.
There you go. A character about whom little is yet known. So there you go. You're a mystery character, Dave.
Mm-hmm. I'll probably be played by a 7-foot-tall Asian man.
Well, you're being played by Peg Wills. It says right here.
Yeah. Oh, okay, well. Is he a 7-foot Asian man? I've never seen Peg Wills.
I think so, yeah.
Okay.
It's been nothing but a joyride in seeing this mad tale of a paranormal conspiracy unfold, all its understated brilliance, Frost said in a statement. Amazon's commitment and support of the show and of original programming generally showed us that we couldn't be collaborating with a bigger or better team. The show is set to go into production next month. So details about casting and release and who Simon Pegg's Dave... Simon Pegg plays Dave. This is horribly written. Simon Pegg's Dave character. Simon Pegg plays Dave. So he's Simon Pegg's going to play you, Dave.
Yeah. He looks a lot like me. I'll at least give him that. He's roguishly handsome with tints of red in his hair. He's got a great British accent like I do. So, I appreciate that.
There you go. So who Simon Pegg's Dave character actually is are presumably coming soon. In the meantime, get ready for the Cornetto boys to fight some ghosts, everybody. So there you go.
Sounds like a plan. I'm actually looking forward to that. Not that horribly written article, but I am looking forward to the new TV series. I like when Nick Frost and Simon Pegg team up and they do these projects. They're always funny and pretty cool. So taking a shot at Ghost Hunters ought to be a fun little program. We'll have to see how it turns out. All right, what's our next story?
Well, Karachi traders are fearful after a mysterious creature was sighted in Shersha. I'm sure you've heard of the Shersha Redemption, Dave.
Yeah, I love that movie. Yeah. Karachi, wasn't that a famous cologne in the 70s, High Karachi?
Oh, I loved it, Dave. The smell of it just made you want to jump up and kick somebody in the throat.
And then jump out a window, if I remember correctly.
Right, yeah, yeah.
Not a good smell, High Karachi. Or High Karachi.
High Karachi. The Shersha Flea Market, which is the great sequel to the Shersha Redemption, which is touted by some as the biggest market for scrap goods in South Asia, has now become a haunted site for some. The sighting of a mysterious out-of-the-world creature, that's what it's called, at the market has sparked fear in some traders who are working there. The traders, as a result, have started closing their shops earlier than before. It all started about 8 days ago when a watchman, Gulzar is his name, was performing his duties outside a warehouse. He heard dogs barking nearby and got up from his chair to see what was going on. Gulzar said that he felt a strange sensation as he was walking towards the area where the noise was coming from. He then spotted a strange creature and ran away. The creature was black and its eyes were as bright as a torchlight, he said. Gulzar has been working as a watchman for the last 25 years. I've never seen anything like that before, was what Gulzar went on to say. Gulzar shared his encounter with the other watchman, but nobody believed him. The next day, another watchman, Abdul Qayyum, was taking a round of the area when he spotted the same creature. The two watchmen claim that the creature has even killed 11 goats at the warehouse. Soon rumors started making the rounds. What do they keep the goats at the warehouse for anyways? Cutting the grass?
That would be my guess. Or goat cheese, right? If you want some goat cheese.
Oh, yeah.
You just put a quarter in their ass and pull their tail. Isn't that how it works?
I think so, yeah. That's probably...
I'm not positive.
No, I think you're dead on that one. Yeah, that's if you want fresh goat cheese, that's how you do it. Soon rumors started making the rounds, leading to fear and panic. Some have claimed that the mysterious figure is 5 feet tall, while others claim that it can jump to up to 20 feet. That's probably should put them in the Olympics. Not everyone believes the story, though. A person who works at the flea market said that he thinks someone is probably pulling a prank, and there is no truth to the sightings. Some traders even approached the Jahanabad police, asking them to investigate the matter. A policeman, Muzamil Shah, that's an interesting first name, said that they had received many reports about sightings of such a figure, adding that they are investigating the matter. So there you go.
Very strange. What a weird sighting, too, huh?
Yeah. 5 foot All tall right. and up to 20 feet that they can jump.
That's crazy. Yeah. Let's do this. We want to hear your calls, and we've got one right now. Again, all you need to do is call our Voices from Beyond voicemail, share your personal encounter with the strange and supernatural, and you do it by calling 651-300-4977. That's 651-300-4977, and we'll play it on an upcoming episode, just like this caller.
Hi, Dave and Tim. I'd like to thank you for all the hard work you do. It's not easy continuing on. But anyways, I've been a caregiver for many years. My name is Amanda. I'm from New Mexico. I've worked hospice quite a bit, and I know you like those hospice stories. But I was taking care of a grandma, really sweet lady, and she was always smiling. In another life, I'm sure she was a model of some sort. But, you know, she kept pretty close to herself, and near the end, she would tell me other people were in the room, when nobody else was there. And, you know, one time she told me it was getting crowded, so she told me to tell everybody to get out. That way I could continue on with my visit. And, you know, because it was rude for everybody to be standing around her like they were. But we were the only ones in the room. Her caregiver had went to the store while I was there. And her other caregiver, her gardener, actually, he took pretty good care of her near the end. But, yeah, we were the only ones in the room. She told me to shoo everybody out, so that's what I did. I even made my hand motions. Everybody, get out. She wants her space. And I kid you not, she was sitting on the bed. I was standing up pretty close to her, about 2 feet in front of her. The shades were down, and the little lamp was on near her bed. So obviously there was her shadow and my shadow. And there was another shadow that came out of nowhere close to the bed. And it started to go, and it passed me. The thing about the shadow, though, is it scared the hell out of me. It scared me, and I started to get real shaky. You know, I'm not really I'm not really a scaredy cat by any means. I saw the shadow, and she's like, "Come on, get out!" the thing went and passed pretty close to me, and I felt a cold haze. I don't know how to explain it, but it was pretty cold. I started to get the shakes really bad, and I had to leave the room for a little bit just because I felt, oh gosh, I felt horrible. I don't know how else to explain it. Like, I got really sick and nauseous, and after I composed myself, I went back into the room. She asked me where I went. I said, oh, I thought I heard somebody knock.
See, folks, it's just that simple. You pick up the phone, you call us, 651-300-4977, and you too can be part of our program on one of our upcoming Saturday episodes. So give us a call, 651-300-4977, or you can always email in your stories to me at dave@darknessradio.com. All right, Tim, where are we going next in the world of supernatural news?
Well, Dave, we're going to outer space, where if aliens are trying to flash us, we now have a way to detect them. I think it's sight and dollar bills. Just saying.
It's sight and, well, right, dollar bills. I don't get the dollar bill reference.
Or beads.
Oh,
if
all
they're
right.
Trying to flash us. I mean, you know, either.
Oh, flashing us. Boy, we're back to being flashed. The moon was flashing us. I think Uranus flashed us not too long ago.
Well, yeah, it winks.
Yeah, Oumuamua flew past us, flashing us in the sky. Yeah. What else have we got going on?
Well, they're flashing laser beams at us, but I think it's pretty much the same thing. Are aliens using super powerful flashlights to get our attention, is what this article says. Astronomers think that there's a chance they are. Since the invention of the radio, humans have been silently listening to the stars, wondering if we are alone in the universe. But if intelligent alien life does exist, the extraterrestrials could be using other forms of technology to communicate. Astronomers are beginning to not only listen to the cosmos, but also gaze toward it for other signs of alien tech. And that includes laser beams. Breakthrough Listen, the most extensive search for extraterrestrial intelligence or SETI program in history, announced that its team will begin looking for new signs of alien technology using the Very Energetic Radiation Imaging Telescope Array System, or VERITAS, at the Fred Lawrence Whipple Observatory in Amado, Arizona. I think this has something to do with toilet paper and Charmin, Dave. Because Whipple's involved.
Yeah, but that's a hugely obscure, now 45-year-old reference, but well played.
Thanks. When it comes to intelligent life beyond Earth, we don't know where it exists or how it communicates. Yuri Milner, a billionaire particle physicist. How does a particle physicist build $1 billion? And founder of Breakthrough Listen said in a statement, so our philosophy is to look in as many places and in as many ways as we can. VERITAS expands our range of observation even further. Using VERITAS, astronomers will begin scanning the night sky for nanosecond flashes of light from nearby stars. Like a lighthouse beacon for the cosmos, these brief pulses of optical light would outshine any nearby stars and could indicate a method of alien communication. With the addition of Veritas, we're sensitive to an important new class of signals, fast optical pulses. Andrew Simeon, the director of Berkeley's SETI Research Center, said in a statement, "Optical communication has already been used by NASA to transmit high-definition images to the Earth from the Moon. There's a reason to believe that an advanced civilization might use a scaled-up version of this technology for interstellar communication." Veritas has looked for such laser pulses from the mysteriously dimming Tabby star after some had speculated that there could be an alien megastructure surrounding it that caused the odd dimming. If the most powerful lasers on Earth were used at Tabby star and pointed in our direction, Veritas could detect them. Of the 1 million stars on the breakthrough list and target list, most of them are 10 to 100 times closer to Earth than Tabby star, meaning even weaker laser flashes from intelligent aliens could be detected. The array of 4 12-meter optical telescopes is traditionally used to detect gamma rays, high-energy radiation emitted by extreme cosmic objects like exploding stars and even black holes in the night sky. When gamma rays hit the Earth's atmosphere, they produce very faint blue flashes of light called Cherenkov radiation, because the particles travel faster than the speed of light through air, and so the blue flashes are the light equivalent of a sonic boom. The telescope's array ability to detect and pinpoint source of these short-lived blue flashes made it the perfect candidate to search for laser beams for distant stars and galaxies. It is impressive how well-suited the Veritas telescopes are for the project, since they were built only with the purpose of studying very high-energy gamma rays in mind, David Williams, a member of the Veritas Collaboration and professor of physics at the University of California, Santa Cruz, said in the statement. The Breakthrough Listen Initiative is a $100 million 10-year project funded by Yuri Milner, a Russian billionaire and science philanthropist. The project, which began in 2015, has already surveyed more than 1,000 stars within 160 light-years away from Earth for signs of alien radio signals with no positive results. We believe that life arose spontaneously on Earth, so in an infinite universe, there must be other occurrences of life, said famed physicist Stephen Hawking during the initiative's launch a few years back. Somewhere in the cosmos, perhaps intelligent life might be watching these lights of ours, aware of what they mean. Or do our lights wander a lifeless cosmos, unseen beacons announcing that here on one rock, the universe discovered its existence? Either way, there is no better question.
Flashing us with giant flashlights from another planet.
I know, we're like...
Are we having like a universal slumber party? And we're trying to message each other from one, I don't know, galactic treehouse to another?
I was going to say, we're like irritating kids at summer camp in the cosmos. We're just like flashing flashlights outside where everybody else is trying to sleep in their tents.
Hey, I've got some cool news. It's up. It's running. It's available. iPhone users, we've promised it for close to 87 years, I believe, Tim. Am I right? About 87
yeah.
years?
About 87, yeah.
We've promised that we would have an iPhone app for Darkness Radio. We finally ponied up the money to have one made and delivered that actually works. It's up and it's available. Go to your app store and download it. You know what's astounding to me, Tim?
What's that?
Astounding to me, the astute listener base that we have all mm-hmm. around the world. Mm-hmm. I post and have been mentioning that we have an iTunes app. And do you know what the response has been?
What's that?
Oh, when are you going to do one for Android?
Yeah, I've seen that. Yeah.
Okay, cool. Good. What about those of us with Android? How come you ain't got one for us?
We do.
We do. What?
We've had one for quite some time.
Like yeah. 4 years.
Yeah.
We've mentioned it on the show. We've posted about it. If you go to our website, it's there. So, yeah, we've got one. You know what my other favorite answer is? All right. Darkness Radio's back. I knew you guys would return.
We've been here
nonstop for since 1882.
Appreciate it, folks.
Yeah, we've been here. Yeah. But I'm glad, whatever the reason, I'm glad you found us again. I'm glad that we're back in your lives. So, whether it's an iPhone app whether it's a Droid app, whether it's Tim delivering you a Bloomin' Onion app to your table at Outback.
Oh, I'll do that for you, sure. Yeah.
Sure. You just have to call ahead.
It's my weekend job.
Tim's number is 612.
No, Dave, call the restaurant. Call the restaurant.
Oh. Well, I thought if they want you specifically to deliver the Bloomin' Onion, the best bet would be to call you.
I'm there most weekends. Don't worry about it. Yeah, it's my part-time job.
So now you can download the app. How exciting is that? And in the app, what do you get, Dave? What do you get? That's the question I get. Well, damn it, how lazy are you? Just go download it and you'll see what you get. First of all, it's free. You can't beat the price, Tim.
Right.
Second of all, it gives you access to Beyond the Darkness every Saturday and Sunday. Did I mention that that's also free, Tim?
Oh, yes. Yes, you did.
Yeah. Gives you access to Midnight in the Desert live stream. So you can listen to the Dark Matter Digital Network from your phone and listen all day long for all the different programming they have. But then tune in Monday through Friday from 9 p.m. till midnight Pacific. That's 10 p.m. till 1 a.m. Mountain Time. Over here in the Central Time Zone, it's 11 to 2 a.m. And for those of you on the East Coast, midnight to 3 a.m. Now you can listen along in the car. You can stream it from your Bluetooth right into your car, Tim. It's like black magic.
Kind of is, yeah.
Yeah, you can listen to that, and that's free. Did I mention that? The Legends podcast with our buddy Jeff Belanger's on there. Oh, you know how much we're going to charge for that one, though, Tim? It's a pretty good podcast. You know how much?
$14.95.
Free, Tim. Play along with me here.
Okay, free.
So, yeah, there's access to all of this great free content. Plus, you can subscribe to True Crime Tuesday. You can subscribe to Midnight in the Desert's archives. We even have some of the Darkives up, so you can listen to old episodes. I think they go from like 2016 back to around 2013 of Darkness Radio episodes. So that's all in the app, plus so much more ways to communicate. As a matter of fact, I have put up a phone number for you to call Tim directly. If you go look at it, you'll see the number right there on the page. 651-300-4977. Well, really, it's our Beyond voicemail.
Oh, you did. Okay.
Whew. Yeah, I didn't give your personal number, 612-48.
Dave.
What? Well, I'm just saying, I didn't give that one.
Give the number for them to call the Google number.
Yeah, 651-300-4977. Okay. That's the number. Plus our P.O. box. Did I mention we have a P.O. box, Tim?
We do?
Yeah. So if listeners want to send us a handwritten note that looks like an old ransom note cut from magazine articles,
yeah,
you can do that. Or if you just want to send us your well wishes or lots and lots of money, I'm not going to say no if people send us money, Tim. It's all there. You can now find ways to reach out to us by calling, by emailing, by mailing us stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Christmas is coming, Tim. The goose is getting fat. Please to put many pennies in these two old guys' hats. That's all I'm saying.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. So there's all that available right there. Hey, Dave and Tim, that's how this email starts. I love the show. Always find the subject of the paranormal interesting. I am a skeptic, however, and would love to hear your opinions on a question, if you don't mind. That's what Owen starts off the email with, Tim. If you don't mind.
Not at all.
It's probably much lighter and easier than that. I just, you know, taking the skeptic, hard-nosed approach in this question.
Sure.
In regards to ghosts, why do we hardly, if ever, hear stories about ghosts outside of Europe and North America? When we hear about spirits in Asia, they're usually presented in different ways. Why do you think that is? I'm also curious as to why there are no ghost sightings of prehistoric or previous species or early man. What are your thoughts? Thanks for reading this. That comes from Owen. Well, Owen, you probably only hear about stories from Europe and North America because those are English-speaking people, and those are the ones that come on our show.
That's fair.
Yeah, so there's that answer. But we do talk about different cultures, and we've talked about Japanese ghosts, Chinese ghosts, mm-hmm. ghosts in Russia, and some of that throughout the years that we've done this program. And yeah, they do have different aspects and takes on it, which again makes me wonder how much of our experiences are predicated on our own beliefs of how the experiences should go.
And actually, Owen, when like Dave has pointed out, throughout the years, we've done different shows having to do with different cultures and their spirits. And actually, ghosts aren't called ghosts in certain cultures. They're believed to be the spirits of their ancestors. When you talk about different African cultures, they don't refer to them as ghosts at all. Sometimes they're spirits that are believed
Diddy
to be
called the duppies.
Well, that's Jamaican. Yeah. They're believed to be spirits of ancestors that help in everyday tasks. things like that. So, I mean, the language is different. The context is different. We simply have adapted ghosts and spirits to our form and what we believe they do. But in different cultures, they're something completely different other than what we've adapted them for.
Right. And, you know, who's to say we haven't seen ghosts from prehistoric times? Maybe that's what Bigfoot is. Maybe that's how he's there 1 minute, gone the next.
True.
You know, I don't know. I wish I knew. That's part of it. Here's my theory. And I think I've talked about this before, but I'll cover it again real quickly. So if we look at time like the string, right, like they used to talk about on Quantum Leap, right? And if you take string from the tip to the tip, that's the linear fashion we think of time. But it's actually, if you crumple it all up, that's kind of what time is more like, this wibbly-wobbly, timey-wimey ball of nonsense. Well, what if the string of, let's say, 2001 to 2020 happens to be laying over the string of 1880 to 1900? So at that point, that's why we're kind of experiencing more ghosts from that Victorian era, more of those 1800s early settler ghosts. Maybe as time continues to move and undulate and the string touches different aspects, maybe 2020 to 2050 will lay across the strings of 12 BC, Tim, and forward, and we'll see some of those different aspects. So it could be that. That could have just been something that came to me when I was high. I can't be sure of either.
Could be. And who's to say that, you know, if you don't go to Egypt or around the pyramids, you won't see a ghost of an ancient Egyptian, you know?
That's true.
Maybe you need to be in that setting to see that ghost.
Could be. You have to inject yourself into that, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and listen, Native American ghosts are seen quite often, and that's quite old.
Yeah.
Right?
Right.
So that's all I got to say about that.
There you go.
I hope that answers your question. Thank you for writing in, Owen. Thank you for writing in. All right, Tim, where's our next news story taking us?
Well, we're going into the service, Dave. Specifically, we're going into the Air Force.
Really?
Yeah. Okay. I hope you're ready.
I didn't think they'd take us.
Well, I'm 4F. I don't know about you, but I'll give my best shot. They're probably going to laugh at me. The Air Force is going to deploy ground-based lasers in their first field test of a directed energy weapon. You know, we've talked about it over the years, about how there's rumors of certain weapons that can be used against either the populace or other, I'm going conspiracy theory here, or other enemies out there. The Air Force announced on Friday that it will soon deploy two ground-based laser weapons to an undisclosed location to test how they can be used against small drones. The service's first operational field test of an experimental directed energy weapon. On Friday afternoon, the Air Force announced that a $23 million sole source contract for two of Raytheon's high-energy laser weapon systems, through which the systems are to be tested for 12 months in an undisclosed contested environment, will be outside the continental United States. What we really want to do is figure out how we can deploy these systems in an environment where our warf fighters work and train every day, said Evan Hunt, director of High Energy Laser and Counter UAS at Raytheon. UAS stands for Unmanned Aerial System, by the way. The 10-kilowatt lasers are to be mounted on small ground-based vehicles and aimed using an interface similar to a video game controller. Oh, so anybody can run it. There you go. The prototype laser weapons were built by Raytheon and incorporate a range of components from the commercial technology industry, including high-performance lithium-ion batteries, the same type used in electrical vehicles. Because laser weapons could fire constantly without wasting ammunition, military technology experts have theorized that they could one day be useful in combating the small, remotely operated quadcopter drones that ISIS has used. They're also expected to be an effective counter against swarming attack drones, a concept that a handful of countries are exploring. The fact that it's a laser weapon also puts you or allows you to put energy in target at the speed of light. It can be an instantaneous heating event, said Michael Gerges, who leads the Air Force's Directed Energy Experimentation Projects. Gierges later said in an email that the test will be the first operational field assessment of a laser weapon. He said the effort is the first Air Force deployment for an operational field assessment of lasers for counter UAS, and the first time we have the entire Air Force enterprise intimately engaged across the acquisition community, test centers, operators, and headquarters.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Laser. That's going to be an interesting interesting point, but it is scary. Well, I guess we're coming into the future, man.
Yeah, that's...
Star Wars is here, brother.
I guess so, huh? Yeah.
You like that? That's my own sound effects. I made those up myself.
Very good. We didn't have
to
spend...
Yeah, right from my mouth.
Didn't have to spend anything out of the budget for that. That was, nope. That was impressive.
Hard to believe, right?
Yeah.
Doesn't it make you feel like you're right there?
It does.
Like watching Star Wars?
It's a little too close, yeah.
It's my mouth, yeah. Dude. Believe it or not, it's my mouth.
You're magic with your mouth, Dave.
That's what people have told me.
Wow. Which people?
Ask your mom. Anyway.
Hey, wow.
Car comes
hey.
With its share of stories. That ding in your bumper when you nervously picked up a first date like Tim's mom, the luxury package you got after a big promotion, or the mileage you saved by riding your bike all summer. While you can't put a price tag on your stories, now with TrueCar, you can at least find out what your car's worth when it's time to sell it or trade it in. Just go to TrueCar. Simply enter your license plate number and watch how high your car details pop up. Then answer a few questions. Navigation and moonroof? Got it. Watch that bump up the value, too. Do you have high mileage? Well, you knew that was going to cost you, but now you know exactly how much it dings your wallet, so you can plan ahead. Once you're finished, you'll get a true cash offer sent in just minutes, which you can take to a local certified dealer to cash out or trade in. So when you're ready to experience a better way to sell or trade in your car, check out TrueCar today. True cash offers are not available in all areas. We've been talking about it. You've been listening. Why aren't you taking action, folks? Maybe you just like giving away money. Maybe you're just one of those kind of people that you're like, you know what? I've got so much money, I don't even know what to do with it. Let's just throw it out the window. Well, if you're not like that, if you're more like Tim and I and you're a bit of a spendthrift, you're always looking for a good deal, we've got it for you. Pluto TV is the leading free streaming television service. Did you hear the part about how much it cost him? Free.
Really?
The leading free streaming television service. That's Pluto TV. You can watch over 100 TV channels and thousands, literally thousands of movies, Tim. Did I mention they're all on demand and they're all free?
Nice.
Yeah. Do you need a credit card? No, you don't need a credit card. Do you need to sign up for it? No, you don't need to sign up for it. Pluto TV is easy. And it's a completely legal way to watch your favorite TV shows and hit movies. What are you waiting for? Never pay for TV again. Download Pluto TV for free on all of your favorite devices today. Your phone, Roku, Amazon Fire TV, Apple TV, smart TVs, PlayStations, heck, anywhere else you stream. Go get it right now. It's free. What are you waiting for? Get yourself Pluto TV. All right, Tim, where are we off to next in the world of supernatural news?
Well, Dave, it turns out that a vampire's remains were found about 30 years ago.
What?
Yep, 30 years ago. And now DNA is giving them new life. Oh, gosh, I hope they didn't bring them back.
What is this, like Jurassic Park of vampires?
I guess so, yeah. They're going to make a theme park and everyone's going to get bit and it's going to be a horrible movie. He had been in the grave so long that when his family dug him up to burn his heart, the organ had decomposed and was not there.
It's a pretty bad vampire, then.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. Desperate to stop him from stalking them, they took his head and limbs and rearranged them on top of his ribs in the design of a skull and crossbones. Oh, so it was like vampire art. It was kind of fun. He was a vampire, after all, and in rural New England in the early 1800s, this is how you dealt with them, evidently. When they were finished, they reburied him in his stone-lined grave and replaced the wooden coffin lid on which someone had used brass tacks to form the inscription JB55. Oh, so he had a name and number like a football player. For his initials and his age. Oh, never mind. Now, 200 years or so after the death of what has become the country's best-studied vampire, DNA sleuths have tracked down the probable name, John Barber. It's a nice name.
That's not very vampire-y.
No, no, not at all.
Wouldn't have been like Count John Barber.
Yeah, it doesn't really strike fear in the hearts of anybody, does it?
Duke John Barber.
Duke John.
How about the barbarian John Barber?
No, there you go. That's right? That's yeah, a good one.
The vampire yeah. barbarian. John Barber,
yeah.
The vampire barbarian. You know what? Barber, John, first of all, a vampire named John just doesn't sound scary.
Although I kind of like the tagline, he'll cut you down, John Barber. It's kind of rustling.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
Yeah. Nice. Yeah.
Yeah. I like that. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. I sit corrected.
There you go. Yeah. He was probably a hardworking farmer, at least. He was missing his top front teeth. Not a great vampire by any means.
Yeah, that's a vampire you don't have to worry about.
Yeah.
Unless he comes poking at you with a straw.
Yeah. He was no neck biter by all means. He had a broken collarbone that had not healed right and an arthritic knee that might have made him limp. Okay, so he wasn't the best vampire out there. He probably wasn't drafted in the first round, I guess.
Tom Stoker and other authors have really kind of romanticized being a vampire. I thought being a vampire means you always feel eternally youthful and strong.
Yeah.
This guy's got arthritis, bad knees, missing teeth,
yeah.
Falling out hair.
Yeah.
First, maybe, you know, it turns out I might be a vampire after all.
Yeah, it might be, Dave.
Got bad knees, yeah. Arthritis.
Yeah.
Well, my teeth are all there, thankfully.
Yeah.
But no hair.
Yeah, there you go.
He's and
it,
the top.
It turns out, Dave, that John Barber died an awful death.
How was that?
Tuberculosis.
Oh. Yeah.
Which was so bad it had scarred his ribs. This guy is not winning. Not winning at the vampire thing.
Good yeah. God.
Yeah.
He's like the runt of the litter vampire pack, I'm guessing.
He is. Vampire runt. Yeah. That's not a great nickname either. The latest findings in a case that started in 1990 when his coffin was discovered in a gravel quarry in Griswold, Connecticut, are contained in a new report by, among others, experts at the Armed Forces Medical Examiner System DNA Laboratory in Dover, Delaware. The report was summarized in a presentation on July 23rd at the National Museum of Health and Medicine in Silver Spring, which aided the study and is where the remains are held. The case is unusual because Barber may be the country's only supposed vampire whose bones have been studied by scientists. The case has been a mystery since the 1990s. Sharla Marshall said in an email, Marshall is a forensic scientist with SNA International in Alexandria, Virginia, who worked on the project. Now that we have expanded technological capabilities, we wanted to revisit JB-55 to see whether we could solve the mystery of who he was. Evidently, he was hurting. That's who he was.
Yeah, it sounds like you've already figured it out.
Yeah. It's the latest chapter in a project that has cast light on the eerie vampire scare in New England, Connecticut, and Rhode Island, especially in the late 1700s and early 1800s, and its connection to the spread of tuberculosis, or consumption, as it was called. The highly contagious disease was so wasting and terrifying that those who died of it were believed to leave their graves, infecting relatives and draining away blood and life, this according to scholars.
Consumption Junction, what's your function?
That was my favorite out of all of them. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. These attacks were more mysterious and less graphic than those of the blood-sucking vampires of Gothic fiction. This was not bats flying through the night, said Nicholas F. Bellantoni, the retired Connecticut state archaeologist who worked on the case from the start and is one of the report's authors. This is not Bela Lugosi. Well, no, I mean, Bela was much more healthy than this guy. I mean, you know.
Good-looking fellow with all of his own teeth.
Exactly, yeah. The terror that was they brought was real. Consumption often caused a bloody cough and left victims pale and gaunt with blood in the corners of their mouths, author and folklorist Michael E. Bell wrote. The emaciated figure strikes one with terror, recounted an 18th century doctor quoted by Bell in a 2013 essay in the journal Criticos, I believe. I don't know. I've never subscribed to it. The forehead covered with drops of sweat, the cheeks a livid crimson, the eyes sunk, the breath offensive, quick and laborious. That just sounds like someone I might have dated. The vampire's true menace seemed to come after death, and he had to be killed again during what Bell called therapeutic exhumation. Often the suspected vampire was a family member who had died of the disease and was thought to be infecting sons, daughters, or a wife. Family members were frequently the ones who were conducting the exhumation. Bell has documented 80 such cases, mostly in remote areas of New England. This was being done out of fear and out of love, Bell and Tony said. People were dying in their families, and they had no way of stopping it. And just maybe this was what could stop the deaths. They didn't want to do this, but they wanted to protect those who were still living. People were desperate, he said. The best method of killing the suspected vampire was to check the exhumed corpse to see whether any liquid blood remained in the heart. If so, the deceased was probably a vampire, according to the belief. The heart was then removed and burned, with family members sometimes inhaling the smoke to prevent further disease. That's rather archaic. Similar incidents have long turned up in Europe, where there were many accounts of corpses being dug up, burned, rearranged, and decapitated, or having stakes driven through them. In Barber's case, there was probably no heart to burn. Bell and Tony and Paul S. Sleedzik, wrote in 1994, so the bones of the chest were disrupted, and the skull and thigh bones were placed in a skull and crossbones position. They wrote, after Barber's grave was discovered, his remains were sent to the museum for study, and a sample from a thigh bone was sent to the DNA labs for analysis. The technology of 30 years ago yielded scant results, the paper's authors wrote, and identification was impossible. When modern tools were used, Y-chromosomal DNA profiling and surname prediction via genealogy data available on the internet, the experts said they came up with a match for the last name, which was Barber. They then checked old cemetery and newspaper records to see whether any Barbers ever lived in Griswold. They discovered a newspaper notice mentioning the death there in 1826 of a 12-year-old boy named Nathan Barber, whose father was a John Barber. Researchers had found a grave near JB's containing a coffin with the notation NB13 similarly tacked on the lid. The project began in November of 1990 when an abandoned cemetery was encountered during mining at a sand and gravel facility in Griswold, according to a study by Sleedzik, Bell and Tony, and colleague David E. Poirier. Human skeletons and crumbling coffin parts emerged from the earth, and two human skulls tumbled down an embankment when three boys were playing there and dislodged them. Investigators eventually removed the remains of 27 people, 5 men, 8 women, and 14 children, from 28 graves in what scholars discovered was old burying ground called the Walton Family Cemetery. I take it it's
good
not
night,
the
John Boy.
Yeah, I was gonna say, I take it it's not the Waltons from TV. One grave contained evidence of a coffin, but no human remains. One got away, Dave.
Dun, dun, dun. That was Vlad Barber.
I think so, yeah.
He was the one good vampire family member.
He was the one who actually was workable and had workable parts. It was grave number 4 that drew the most attention. Everyone was in good anatomical position except this one individual, JB55, Bell and Tony said. Under his coffin lid, Bell and Tony and his colleagues found the strange skull and crossbones arrangement. His thigh bones were uprooted from the anatomical position and crossed over the chest. The chest had been broken into, and the skull was decapitated and moved away, he said. I was totally befuddled, had no clue what I was looking at. Research soon suggested a link to the New England vampire folk belief. So JB turned out to have tuberculosis, which was evident because of the lesions on his ribs. We do believe that he was rearranged in the grave because he was believed to be undead. Bell and Tony said JB had probably been deceased 4 or 5 years when he was exhumed, which, based on his recovered coffin hardware, probably happened in the early 1800s. Here in New England, we had large farming families, he said, because they didn't understand the transmission of the disease. You had family members who were suffering from tuberculosis sitting at the dinner table with the whole family coughing, and you had tubercular victims sleeping in one room with 5 or 6 brothers and sisters coughing. It was an epidemic, he said. So what now?
Wait, so is the reason that they believe this guy might have been a vampire was because of his coffin?
Oh, God.
All right, maybe not. God.
You're not coughing right now, are you? I mean, we don't have to put a stake in this.
I'm a vampire now. For
probably
sure.
warn your family to get the hammer and stake out. So what now of poor John Barber, the alleged vampire? Listen, Bell and Tony said he was a hardworking farmer, probably low middle class. Oh, that's no way to talk about a dead vampire. You could see it in his bones. You could see it in the arthritic condition of his vertebrae. Hardworking, good Christian man, I'm sure. Except for the skull and crossbones and the stake in his heart, Dave. There you go.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a bad way to go out.
Yeah.
Put that down on my ledger. Ways I don't want to die. Stake through the heart. Yep. Well, that's right after drowning, being burned alive, and eaten by a shark.
There's that.
Yeah. And the heart fits right into that wheelhouse as well.
Mm-hmm.
All right. For listeners, listen, I do want to make a quick comment before we go to break. We are pre-recording today's show on Wednesday morning to air on Saturday. So I had made and posted a video Wednesday, and I wish I could give you an answer today when you're listening to this Saturday regarding the outcome. I won't have known it by then. I'll know. This is weird. It's like a time travel deal. Because it's Wednesday, I'll know later today what the outcome is. But because we're airing this on Saturday and it won't be updated, I won't have any way to alert you, the audience, until sometime next week, unless you follow my social media. For those of you that are wondering what I'm talking about, I'd posted a video on my Facebook. We were very excited. We've done a little teasing and things on the show and such regarding a change in the family and, oh, you know, big family news last week and leading people in, you know, thinking they were going to get one thing and then found out about the TV show. Well, Winnie and I have been very excited because we found out that on the 4th of July that we're going to be parents and this would be our first baby together. And we're very, very excited about this. And Monday, this past week, I was out in Los Angeles filming for the TV show, doing a couple little pickup lines and segments. And Winnie was to go to her first ultrasound. That was just to measure the baby and find the heartbeat because they believe she was in and around the 9-week mark. And went in and so I'm video chatting with her and they're getting ready to show it. The reaction was not great. And they called in the doctor who then told us that he believes this is not a viable pregnancy and that the baby most likely passed a couple weeks back, which was devastating gut punch news to us. However, they don't know really what's going on. They may have miscalculated how far along pregnant she is. And which is weird to me. I don't understand. You know, Tim, how they do it is they go by the last day of your last period.
Right.
Well, you know, so if my wife's last day of her last period was on the 5th, and let's say that we, you know, did the postherpetic POCA on the 15th, it could take up to 10 days to fertilize.
Mm-hmm.
So that'll put you closer to the 25th of the month. And that's a huge swing between, you know, that's a 4-week swing right there from when they consider the gestation of the baby being pregnant. So they were kind of hot on us just going in and ending this pregnancy. But then it was in the next breath, it's like, but, you know, I guess maybe we're just miscalculating and it could be that, you know, it just hasn't matured enough and we're, you know. So I was like, it was very disheartening to get these words of, you know, you're pregnant a week ago. Then this Friday or Monday, well, we don't think it's a viable pregnancy, but, you know, we could be wrong, but we should probably terminate it. But we could be wrong. So it's just been a lot of juggling. Winnie today on Wednesday went in for another blood test. They're looking for a growth hormone in her blood, and it's supposed to jump exponentially for a healthy baby. She was at 53,000. The doctor contacted us yesterday and said, well, I wasn't expecting it to be that high, which makes me feel like, again, maybe they miscalculated. So she went in for another blood test today. We should have results by the end of today or tomorrow on Thursday. Then next week, possibly taking another look at an ultrasound before any final decisions are made. But it's just been to be told we lost the baby. We have to evacuate the baby. Well, maybe we don't. Maybe it's not. Maybe we're miscalculating, but we think we're not miscalculating, but we could be miscalculating, has been just absolutely nerve-wracking. So it's Saturday. If you have it in your heart to just throw a good prayer towards my wonderful wife and the baby, either way, that she heals and is fine and that, you know, the baby will be fine or everybody will be okay no matter what the final outcome is. And I want you to know, folks, we're, you know, we're devastated by the possibility of what could be happening. But on the other side, we're very blessed to have each other. I'm blessed to have this job and have an outlet like this to all of you. So I just wanted, for those of you listening on Saturday that saw my Facebook post, be like, well, Huckabee's not mentioning it. Now you have a little bit of a better handle why I did mention it, because we're pre-recording before we have any results. But if you keep following me on Facebook, you will be able to see what's going on, and I'll update the audience that way. But for all of you that have chimed in and sent prayers and healing and all, we really appreciate it. Thank you very much. Let's take a quick break. We'll come back. We've got more strange and supernatural stories and more of your tales right after this.
Launchpad DM is a totally free platform and service for anyone who wants to podcast, offering unlimited hosting and access to a dashboard with all of your show's analytics. You own and control everything, including subscribers. And it's a great discovery tool to help people find your podcast. You may even get invited to join the official Podcast One roster with even more perks like access to producers, marketers, sales teams, and more. Sign up today at launchpaddm.com.
Beyond the darkness.
We're back. Thank you for joining us here on the Best in Paranormal Talk Radio. This is a Supernatural News and Parashare Saturday. I'm your host, Dave Schrader. That guy over there, the cuddly and affable Mr. Tim Dennis, our Supernatural News reporter. We want to hear your stories. Call the Voices from Beyond voicemail, 651-300-4977. That's 651-300-4977. You could just call and leave nice messages. Say hello to Tim and I if you'd like, but we want to hear your stories. So give us a call. Tell us your stories, just like this caller.
This is Chuck out of Oklahoma City. I was just calling to tell you about the historic Fort Reno and the what we like to call the Victorian House. Well, a few years back, I was a member of a team. We used to do tours there all the time, about 2 or 3 times a month. We'd get inside the Victorian House to do EVP sessions, and there was just always something going on. Now, like any other good team, we believe we figured out something. So we would set up toys in the attic for the little girl spirit that was believed to have been there. So one night, me and a fellow team member were up in the attic to go check on the toys, see if they'd been played with. And we're just discussing things back and forth when I got uneasy. I looked over, and we didn't have our flashlights on. There was barely any moon out in Oklahoma. Sometimes it's dark and, you know, redneck nowhere country like that. And me and him are talking, and finally I said, okay, something's wrong. So I turned my flashlight on, and I was facing a chimney with a face that had sucked back inside the chimney as soon as the flashlight hit. I looked over at my former team member, and he looked at me, and I asked, did you see what I saw? And he's like, I believe so. We discussed it, and thought that was pretty creepy, so we just kept it to ourselves and went back downstairs to the middle level where they were doing a session. I'd take out my EMF and set it in the hallway because I'd always kind of heard things coming from that direction. There was a bathroom next to it where you could hear a little girl giggling, but there's always something in the hallway. So we're sitting there and letting all the people do their questions, and I'm watching my EMS meter rise up in the air, drop back down, rise up in the air, drop back down. So to this day, I have not been allowed back in it. They shut it down for tours, or you can only go outside, and I'm no longer a member of the team. However, there's something that draws me to that particular house. Last time I took my wife and our children, they wanted to see what Daddy always did. So we went there, and as we're walking up, I got a feeling, and my wife looked over and told me I could see something moving, and it shot through the house. And when I walked up to touch the glass, the whole glass was vibrating, and it was a feeling of come in. I don't know. I just get a feeling of love, dread, and hatred, and I feel like I'm going to end up in that house when I've passed on. I don't have an explanation as to why I feel that way. Perhaps you may have something or an idea, but one of my stories, and I've been on here long enough, I will call back and give some more. Thank you, guys. Keep doing what you're doing. Love you guys.
All right, we're back. Where are we going to go next in the world of supernatural news, Mr. Dennis?
Well, Dave, to start it off this segment, I figured I'd read a nice, cuddly, huggable, lovable story that would warm everybody's hearts.
Aw, I love those kind.
Yeah.
What's the story?
The FBI evidently found a bucket of heads, arms, and legs and bodies sewn together at an Arizona body donation facility.
What?
Well, I didn't say what would necessarily warm the heart, did I? It said it would put your heart together with different body parts.
What?
Yeah, we go to Phoenix, Dave, where gruesome details have been released in a lawsuit against a body donation and tissue bank facility in Phoenix. Evidently, Phoenix is not the place to go if you don't want to play human centipede.
Good God.
Mm-hmm.
Aren't these parts supposed to be kept to help people that need them?
Well, sometimes you got to keep them all together so you keep the blood flow going. I don't know. I don't know a lot about this stuff, Dave. I'm not the expert. The FBI rated the Biological Resource Center as a part of a human body parts trafficking investigation in 2014. I didn't know that was a thing, but evidently you can get anything on eBay. Agents found buckets full of body parts. It's hard to even say that sentence. And different people sewn together and hung up on a wall because art is art, Dave. Don't question it. According to testimony by one of its agents, this is a horror story. It's just unbelievable. This story is unbelievable, said Troy Harp, who gave the bodies of his mother and grandmother to the facility in 2012 and 2013. Oh, my God. How would you like to see mom and grandma put up on the wall?
No. And they sewed parts of bodies together, right? Like somebody was piecing together a Frankenstein?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh.
Harp, one of more than 30 plaintiffs in the lawsuit against the BRC, donated their bodies with the understanding that they would be used for scientific purposes. They kind of were. Cancer and leukemia and whatever else using sample cells, that's what I was told, he said. But that's not what happened, Dave. Buckle in, kiddo. In 2014, the FBI raided the facility in hazmat suits as part of a multi-state investigation into the illegal trafficking and sale of human body parts. For the first time, testimony from one of the FBI agents who conducted the raid has been released to the public. The agent said he found, are you ready for this? A cooler filled with male genitalia. That's right, kids.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, if you ever wanted
all
to win.
All the married guys in town. Thank you, everybody.
If you ever wanted to win something at the old church raffle, that would be one of them. Cooler filled with male genitalia. A bucket.
Under the B6. Bingo. We have a good bingo. Please pick through the basket of male genitalia. Whatever you like is yours to take home.
Also found in the warehouse there was a bucket of head, arms, and legs. Lots of
head, arms, knees, and legs, knees, and legs. What?
There was also, oh, God, infected heads,
Infected with what?
Bacteria, Dave. And a small woman's head sewn onto a large male torso, like Frankenstein hanging up on the wall, which is called a morbid joke in the lawsuit.
God, this is so gross. Why are people like this?
Harp said, who in their right mind? It's absolutely gross. The lawsuit says the bodies were cut up with chainsaws and bandsaws, Dave. Tools that are not appropriate for dismembering scientific bodies, Harp said. The lawsuit also says pools of human blood and bodily fluids were found on the floor of the freezer.
God, what?
Yeah, and that there were bodies with no identification tags. So in other words, they didn't even know who belonged to what. Harp says that his mother's ashes showed up by mail on his doorstep shortly after the raid, but he isn't even sure that it's her ashes. He said his mother and grandmother wanted to help medical research after their deaths, yet he doesn't believe their bodies ever made it out of the BRC building. When asked if he feels he's ever gotten closure, Harp said, no, this is open, and I don't think I ever will. BRC owner Stephen Gore was sentenced to 1 year of deferred jail time and 4 years probation, Dave. That's all he got after he pleaded guilty to illegal control of an enterprise. Harp said that's not enough, and he wants more or to see more federal regulation of facilities like the BRC, which has now closed. The lawsuit into the center is ongoing.
That's unbelievable.
Yeah.
Good gravy. Oh, my God. Seriously. What is going on with this world?
Yeah.
Dude, people are weird. At what point do you think, you know what, Tim? I'm kind of bored. We got a whole warehouse full of body parts. You want to go spill some fluid samples and infect a couple of heads and stitch us together a new body?
I don't know at what point you get so jaded in your job that you think, just gotta fill up a cooler full of dicks, Dave. That's the only way. And I don't mean to be morbid and laugh at that, I don't know at what point you get so jaded in your job that you think, you know what, just gonna do it.
People need help.
Yeah.
People seriously, seriously need help. Oh my God. Well, you know, it could be worse. It could have been one of us in one of those buckets, Tim. But that's why I'm not going to give my body to science. I'm willing my body to you, Tim, to do with as you please.
Oh, cool. I'm just going to set you up in my studio here right across from me.
That'd be great.
Yeah. We'll just play radio all day.
Nice.
Yeah.
Hello, Tim and Dave. What?
Hi.
Tim and Dave?
Hi.
What?
Huh?
Is this a typo? Tim and Dave?
Well, they're just saying hi. That's all.
Aesthetically, it's better to see it alphabetical. Dave and Tim. I'm just saying.
No, I don't know. They're just saying.
You're Dave and Tim. The Timbereen Man. Ooh, how come nobody's ever used that on it? Hey, Mr. Timbereen Man. My name is Shane, and I live in Utah. When I was 8 years old, I lived in Salt Lake City, Utah. We lived Avenues area, two doors down from the infamous serial killer, Ted Bundy. He lived in an older home that was a converted apartment. My friends and I knew Ted. We would toss the football around with him. Oh. Sometimes he'd give us candy and be really cool to us.
No.
Other times, he was aloof and moody.
I bet he was.
Wasn't that the name of your law firm that you were going to start up, Aloof and Moody?
Yes. Barristers at law, yeah. Aloof and Moody.
A couple of times he'd be working on his car, the tannish Volkswagen Beetle everyone remembers. Once he was pulling out the passenger seat. I thought it was strange. He spotted me looking, and I asked, what are you doing? He explained that the seat was broken and he was going to buy a new seat. He also had removed the inside door handle and said that it was busted. He gave me a different look than he would normally give. My eyes appeared to be completely black. Or his eyes appeared to be completely black, and he had an angry look on his face. He snapped at me, Shane, You asked too many goddamn questions. Now get the hell out of here. Go home.
Wow.
A couple days later, he saw me outside, came over and apologized for his previous behavior. Sometime later, my friends and I were playing ball, and the pass landed in Ted's driveway, where there was a cellular type door, or cellar, sorry, not cellular, Tim, my eyes are playing tricks on me. There was a cellar type door. Ted came out of the house and snapped, "Get the fuck away from here."
Whoa.
And he had that same crazed look on his face and said, "It's full of bats and black widows. We wouldn't want anything bad to happen to you now, would we?"
I bet the widow part was right.
Yeah, the way he said it creeped me out. When I joined my friends, I told them what Ted had said. My friend Chad told us his father said, "Steer clear of Ted. He's weird." His dad was right on it, apparently.
Yep.
Chad's dad and mom used to be kind of friendly with Ted, but his father was freaked out by the way Ted looked at his wife. She was a pretty woman with long brown hair, you know, that 70s style.
Oh, yeah.
A few times Ted would offer my mom a ride to work. She took the ride one time. After that, she told my dad Ted had a darkness about him, and he acted odd and was sweaty. This was October, so it was strange. Needless to say, she never took another ride from him. After Ted was caught trying to kidnap that girl from Murray, Utah Mall, he never returned to his apartment. When we would play outside, that cellar door would bang like someone had dropped it. There was a padlock on it, so it was that it couldn't be lifted, and there were no real windows any of us could see. So it would be pretty difficult to get in or out of that cellar. Sometimes we'd hear faint screams and women's voices coming from that cellar, perhaps a disembodied victim of Ted's. I still wonder about that. That's creepy.
Ugh.
We moved to another house 6 years after Ted was caught in Florida. To this day, I've never been back to my childhood home. It's still kind of creepy. I'm just glad my friends and family survived our neighbor serial killer. I feel bad for all those victims and families. For a while, I carried guilt about his actions. Like, I could have done something to stop this evil. But really, how can you stop an inhuman devil? Well, that's my story. Thanks for all your time and an excellent show. Longtime listener, Shane. Keep up the good work, fellas.
Wow.
Yikes.
You escaped. Wow, Shane, you escaped. Yeah. That's all I can say. I'm just in shock.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
All right, where are we off to next, Tim?
Well, Dave, there's a hunt for friendly yowies out there. A mom is convinced that a family of kind-hearted beasts is leaving her flowers and nuts as gifts. There's a joke there, but I'll leave it alone. As an explorer releases audio that he says proves that the creatures exist. A mother is convinced a family of kind-hearted yowies is leaving her flowers and macadamia nuts as gifts. Jackie Liversidge is living in Tarzali in the Tablelands region of Queensland. For 11 months when she claims that she's been visited by two different creatures. Ms. Liversidge has said that one had an athletic black figure, muscular arms, dark hollow eyes, and she felt a strong bad feeling upon its sighting. This according to the Cairns Post. The mother recalls sleeping in fear in the same room as her son and niece. On one occasion when my niece moved in with me, she saw a black silhouette figure standing at her bedroom window from the veranda. She was that terrified, she did not move or even yell out to me, she said. I would sit on the veranda till 2 a.m. waiting with a large piece of wood that had a screw through it, sticking out on the other side. I think she was ready for him. Her landlord advised her to contact police, who offered a drive-by inspection, but she refused, claiming it's easy to hide in the bush. When Miss Liversidge attempted to record the beasts, the camera would go black, she said. She attempted to feed them fruit and meat, but they never took the produce, instead leaving behind traces of their activity. Miss Liversidge then said she found two macadamia nuts in shells at her back doormat, and then found a dead rat in the same spot. A message from the mob of yowies. She found an unusual flower in perfect condition, a mix of pink and purple color, but a metallic color that I haven't seen before. She said she looked everywhere around the property for the plant, but didn't find one. Miss Liversidge described it as Yowie's leaving behind gifts and showing her what they are, or what they ate, rather. She decided to move out of the home in 2016 with her children's safety in mind. The woman's story comes as Believe Australian Paranormal and UFO Radio released a sound clipping captured by a Yowie explorer. Speaking on the Believe Australian Paranormal and UFO Radio podcast, Yowie explorer Ron spoke to his encounters with Yowies west of the Sunshine Coast. He shared a snippet of what he claimed was Yowie making a grunting noise with the podcast. Explaining his encounters with Yowies, Ron said, "You can hear them plain as day walking through. You can hear them shuffling around in the bushes and shining torches in there, but you just can't see anything." The Yowie catcher said the area is quite active, as he's been there about 40 times and has experienced action, in quotes, 30 times. I wonder what kind of action he's talking about. He once visited the creek about 10 p.m. and saw 28 rock stacks. The amount of times it must have taken to stack these rocks, we were only there 36 hours before, he said. There's a section of track where we lose power on our own audio and video. It just shuts down. They're fully charged and it just shuts down. You walk about another 20 yards and they power back up again, he went on to say. In two specific Yowie sightings, Ron recalled seeing one at the creek and a much larger, more paranormal beast crossing a track. The one I saw on the ridge looked like flesh and blood to me. The one I saw on the track, the way it glided across the track was paranormal, he said. You've got to see it to believe it. It really is mind-blowing.
Speaking of mind-blowing, I got a story a buddy of ours sent over, Joe from Louisville, Tim.
Mm-hmm.
During a bad storm.
Mm-hmm.
Right, you always want to seek some place of solace, right?
Sure.
Your own little fortress of solitude, if you would.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Maybe diving into the bathroom where, you know, of course you're going to be safe in the bathroom. We've learned that from movies. You hide in the bathtub, right? If the house blows over, the bathtub protects you.
Sure.
Well, you can go ahead and scratch going to the bathroom off your favorite things to do during a thunderstorm now, Tim.
Okay.
A Florida woman's toilet literally exploded after her septic tank was struck by lightning over the weekend. Luckily, Mary Lou Ward was not using the toilet at the time of the strike. Ward told WINK, the wink, Tim.
The wink.
The toilet shattered into hundreds of pieces, and that the lightning strike was the loudest sound she'd ever heard. It used to be our toilet, Ward said. We have nothing now. So she officially does not have a pot to piss in, Tim. According to the ward's plumber, the lightning struck the methane gases that had built up the pipes from all the fecal matter.
Mm.
I used to love that show in the 80s. Fecal matter.
Oh, yeah. That
Urkel kid cracked me up.
He was pretty good. Yeah.
I'm just glad none of us were on the toilet, Ward said. That's the main thing. Dude, how scary that you have to be concerned that while you're pooping, a lightning strike could take out your whole your toilet.
I'm thinking how scary that they've never heard of Ridex to put in their septic tank.
Ooh, is that? Yeah.
Yeah.
Crazy stuff. I don't know. That was just like a hand of God story to me. I thought I should share. Very weird, right? That just shows you God's got a twisted sense of humor.
Yeah, that's for sure.
All right. Let's get rocking and or rolling. What's our next story?
This next one is about a U.S. soldier who witnessed a UFO incident dubbed Britain's Roswell, and he's come forward about it. Another veteran U.S. serviceman has broken a silence about witnessing Britain's most famous UFO encounter nearly 40 years ago. Ex-Sergeant Michael Smith has revealed officially for the first time that he also saw the spooky activity in 1980 in the Suffolk countryside. Back in 2016, Steve Longero, who was a young U.S. Air Force police officer, was working at the bases at RAF Bentwaters and RAF Woodbridge, came forward about witnessing strange lights while on duty. Now, Mr. Smith, then a 19-year-old member of the 81st Airborne Police Squadron at RAF Bentwaters, has come forward to reveal what he says he saw. He said, "A month before the base was put on alert, I was called out and I got onto as bunker by one of the gates. I was having a pee outside," he said, "when I saw an orange glowing light in the woods. It was a reddish ball. well, that's a good time to be caught by a UFO. It stopped right in front of me. It just stayed there and hovered 2 feet off the ground, and I called for reinforcements. I was scared to death. Ever since the incident, theories and rumors have grown. Only last year, there was claims that the Rendlesham Forest incident, because it has become known, was in fact a prank played on the U.S. Air Force by the SAS. Dubbed Britain's Roswell, the reported sightings and contacts with aliens took place over a series of nights in December of 1980, and the incident continues to fascinate UFO enthusiasts and conspiracy theorists. The Ministry of Defense stated at the time that the event posed no threat to national security, and it therefore was never fully investigated. Skeptics have explained the sightings as a misinterpretation of a series of nocturnal lights, a fireball, the beam from the Orfordness Lighthouse, or even bright stars. And there you go. That's the story.
I like that they're saying that it was just an elaborate prank. Pardon me. An elaborate prank played on the American military.
Yeah, that's a good one, too. But I like the fact that this guy got caught with his pants down taking a pee and actually saw
it. That would be my luck, right? See, that's why I don't go in the woods, Tim. With my luck, I'd be out and I'd have to, you know, nature would call, if you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm.
And I would be pooping in the woods when Bigfoot would stumble upon me. And right, is that like the worst possible case scenario is to be in a prone position like that and have Bigfoot come up on you?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
What do you do?
Apologize for cracking in his woods?
Got some toilet paper I can borrow? You, hey, can you turn around? We'll talk in a few minutes. I don't know. What would you say?
I probably apologize for crapping in a spot. Probably his living room, you know, that you're deucing in. So I'd probably want to apologize and two, offer to put it in a bag and take it with me.
Yeah. At least you're being polite about it.
Yeah.
Me, at least you're in the right place to have it scared out of you if you're going at that moment.
Right. Yeah.
Crazy. Hello, Dave and Tim. I'm listening to the latest episode of The Story from the Sailor, and I thought I'd share a story about a telephone. Many years ago, my mother worked with a woman whose husband was the overnight security guard at a funeral home. This was way back when phones had rotary dials. Da 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 da. That's Jurassic Park theme, Tim.
Oh, yeah.
Dinosaur phones.
Dinosaur phones.
A business phone had these stiff buttons on the bottom where you could select one of four lines in addition to a hold button. When someone used a phone, someone in the funeral home, the button for that phone would illuminate on all the phones to indicate that that line was in use. One night, after making his rounds through the funeral home and seeing that nobody was there, nobody alive anyway, he sat down at his little desk near the front door to read his newspaper. After a while, he noticed that one of the buttons was lit. It was the button that corresponded to the phone in the body room. After a few minutes, the button went dark. It was as if someone in the body room had picked up the phone in there to make a phone call and had hung up when the call was done. The security guard quit the next day. That comes from D. That's kind of cool and creepy.
Yeah, it is.
Kind of cool and creepy. All right, Tim, what's our final news story of the day?
Final news story comes from a star over in England, Dave. It comes from Strictly Come Dancing star Jo Wood. She believes she was an Egyptian queen in a past life. Former Strictly Come Dancing contestant Jo Wood thinks she was an Egyptian royalty in a past life. The model, who's 64, chatted with a paranormal expert on her podcast, Alien Nation, with Jo Wood, and was delighted when she told she was once an Egyptian queen. Janine Regan Sinclair, appearing on a recent episode, said, "I can basically pick up on your past lives and communicate with your soul. It's all stuff in your energy field, really. I'm just super sensitive. I'm definitely seeing you in Egypt. I'm seeing you then with one of those head regalia things like the pharaohs had. You got two jackals with you, and you've got two children with you, a boy and a girl. They're about 10 or 11 years old. There's lots of wealth around you, Joe. That's the thing that's jumping out at me the most." A thrilled Joe then replied, "Wow, I've always loved Egypt. I'm absolutely fascinated by Egypt. I watch every show I can about Egypt." Elsewhere on the podcast, Joe discussed believing in aliens and talked about the UFOs that she's seen. She told Janine, "I've seen orbs which came up to the side of the plane when we were flying over South America. Me and my son saw them. And then I saw a great UFO in South America, too, in Brazil. I saw it fly to the side and then fly off. It was so clear it couldn't have been anything else." Speaking further, she said she's always known there's life out there. It follows a conversation with fellow believer Robbie Williams that saw the former Take That star reveal his fear about aliens. The dad of 3, 45, confessed he was once scared to communicate with extraterrestrials and even grew so anxious he introduced around-the-clock security at his home. He said on the podcast, "The reason why I started having 24-hour security was not for my own safety. It was just because I was scared of what was happening around me when I was alone. I was scared to talk to them because that would make it real, and it was just in my head that it would then be just, and then it would just be in my head." You got to smoke a little to understand that one. "If I said it out loud, then it would be more scared than I already was." You figure that one out. I got to take a few puffs to figure it out myself. There you go.
Well, that's it for this week. Thank you all for tuning in and being part of the program. Tomorrow we will be back. Tim's got a great program lined up for you. Tim, what's on the docket for tomorrow?
On the docket tomorrow, we have David Weatherly with us, and we're going to be talking haunted dolls, Dave, of all kinds, and a little bit about the magic behind it as well.
Fantastic. We'll be tuning in for that. I will be off. I'll be back with you guys True Crime Tuesday and back next week. That is when I will be available again. Sorry, my phone's going off in my room while we're doing this. That's it for this week. Thank you for tuning into the best in Paranormal Talk Radio. And thank you all for your kind words and show of support. We'll be back again here with you, both of us, next weekend on Beyond the Darkness.